Hey guys, I've never been to dorm night before. I feel like I'm walking on hallowed ground, kind of. Like, this just feels really cool. And so thanks for letting me be part of this. And I'm excited to be talking tonight about something that I'm sure none of you have ever thought about before, or care much about, or think is all that relevant. I mean, I don't know why we're talking about dating, but anyways, here we are. Let me share a little bit of my background with some of this stuff. We moved out on my dad when I was 8, and my parents got a divorce about 4 years later. And from that point on, learning about and trying to help other people marry well has been one of the big passions of my life. And from the time of my teens on, that made me has made me a student of dating, my various terms, whether we call it dating or whether you call it courtship or whatever. But just like, if you want to marry well, like how do you get there? Part of what happened with my parents was that process of getting married, they didn't do very well at all, and that was part of why what happened. And I realized pretty early on that most Christians that I knew had no idea how to date in a godly way, in a biblical way, or even that there was a way to date in a godly way or a biblical way. And I realized pretty early on that there was a lot of hunger for wisdom on how to do that. I remember I had been learning some stuff, and I remember going out for coffee with a guy that I had been mentoring, and he was dating, and he was telling me something that him and his girlfriend were doing that he was really proud of that I thought was just really stupid. And I told him that, and I told him why from the Bible. And just, if you're ever going to tell someone something that they're doing is stupid, you know, back it up with the Bible, right? And so I told him that, and he was staring at me with these big eyes, and I'm like, oh man, I've gone too far with this guy. And he's like, no one has ever told me before that there's stuff in the Bible that applies to a dating relationship. Like, this is a guy who grew up in a good Christian family, all this kind of stuff. No one had ever told him this stuff before. I remember shortly after Amy and I got married, that's my wife. This past summer, we had our 11th anniversary. And when shortly after we got married, I know probably 11 years feels like a long time to some of you. And trust me, it's just like, it's nothing. But anyways, we were... a guy in my church who I didn't know very well wanted to go out for coffee. And I was like, am I in trouble? Did I, like, you know, push around one of his kids in a youth event or something? Like, I don't know. And he said, I watched you and Amy date. How did you do that? Because that's not what me and my wife did. And I want to know how to teach my boys how to do that. And I just saw the hunger in him mixed with a lot of regret. Before I came to Nipwin, I was a young adults pastor at a church in Regina, and every 2 years we would do a 6 or 7 week series on relationships and dating, and we always had a whole bunch of people that would just show up just for that, and I saw so much hunger for knowing how to do this very difficult, confusing thing in a wise and a godly, a God-honoring and a biblical way. At the same time, I also discovered that when you actually encounter what God in His Word has to say about some of this stuff, there can be a lot of opposition to it. Opposition in here. Because some of what God has to say may not be what you want to hear. And when God has to say something that is not what you want to hear, what many people do right away is just shut it down, because they're filtering everything through their own the grid of what they like. So when they hear something they don't like, then they go and they furiously flip through the Bible to pull out of context verses to somehow prove it wrong so they can justify their own opinions. Or they just have a really hard time with it. I remember a friend of mine who was a missionary, and he had been in India, and among the people that he was with, they really were struggling with marriages. And so he was trying to teach them. So they did a marriage seminar. And so he spent a whole morning, he said, in this whole first session, talking about how husbands need to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and sacrificial love and all this kind of stuff. And at the break time, one of these guys comes up to him, one of the people from around there, and says, I have a question for you. Can I beat my wife? And the guy goes like, oh. He's like, did you, like, he's thinking inside, did you not hear a single thing that I said this whole time? Like, have you, like, so he inwardly, he sighs and he looks up at the ceiling. He's like, okay, just think about everything we've talked about. Loving your wife as Christ loved the church, you know, like, and he explains, so no, you cannot beat your wife. And the guy's listening thoughtfully and then goes, but what if she needs it? So do you see, when you have certain cultural ideas deeply rooted in your head, it can be really hard to pull them out, even with the Word of God. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. We just have to just open ourselves up. And so that's what I'm asking of you guys tonight. At the beginning here, I'm asking that you would be willing for the fact that you might not know everything about this topic, that some of the things you think you know might be wrong, that some of the things I say you might not like to hear, but what's going to be your grid to evaluate what I say? If it's just going to be your own opinions and just, well, what I like or what I don't like, we might as well just turn off the lights and go home here, right? But I'm asking you, would you be willing to hear what some of the things I have to say tonight and ask, is this line up with what God has said in His Word? And if so, then you need to accept it, even if you might not like it. Because we're Christians, not Lycians or whatever religion it is where you just believe whatever you like. So I'm asking you to be open to having some of our cultural ideas. Here's the thing, guys. Dating is one of those things, and marriage and relationships that we have picked up on so much of it in little ways from little bits of culture here and there and everywhere. We maybe have, if you were to write down every thought you had about marriage and relationships, you could probably fill a notebook or a binder full of them. And you've picked up on these things throughout your whole life as you've watched other relationships, as you've watched Disney movies, God forbid, as you've done all kinds of stuff. And I'm just saying, Disney is not the place to learn about relationships. Like, seriously, it takes, like, so Cinderella, it's like, you just meet this guy, and then it's like, yeah, like, rest of my life, I'm in. Like, if that happened in real life, you'd be, like, sending this person to therapy, right? But anyways, what we need is we need to realize that we've picked up on a lot of ideas. Many of them may not be biblical, and we might not realize it till we hold them up to the Bible. That's what we're going to try and do tonight. So here's the plan for tonight. I'm going to talk about a big idea and then four implications from that big idea, and then some practical stuff after that, and depending on how much we have time for. The big idea, I think most of you will agree with me about, but then as we talk about those four implications, I think you might be surprised where we go. So the big idea is that dating is about marriage. Okay, so like I said, I don't think anyone's going to disagree with me on that. Now, this is actually very interesting because a few years ago, this actually was quite a controversial idea. How many of you have heard of the book I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Josh Harris? Okay, a lot of you have. It was a bestseller. Every Christian had read it. It's really sad. Josh Harris has gone way off the deep end in the last couple of years. But he wrote this book because when he first wrote it back in the 90s, what was very popular at that time was this idea of recreational dating. So I'm talking among Christians, recreational dating. And so recreational dating means just like dating for fun. Like, you're not dating with any goal or direction. You're just having a girlfriend or having a boyfriend is just what you do. So you just date. And then eventually you'd be like, oh, I should maybe get married. And so eventually that'll happen. But dating has had no direction. And you just dated to just have a romantic partner, to have someone to make out with when you wanted to do that kind of thing. And you're allowed to laugh at that. And so just to have someone, to have a romantic partner. And that was it. And so Josh Harris wrote this book saying, no, this is ridiculous. And that book helped kind of make quite a cultural change. And I think we realize now dating for fun is really stupid for two big reasons. One is it plays basketball with your heart. I mean, you can't just develop romantic attachments to people and go in these romantic relationships just for fun. It's like giving your heart to those people out there playing volleyball right now and just be like, you want to just like bash this around? Like, sure, go for it, right? So we understood just practically it was really stupid. But then biblically, it was really foolish because all of those things that you're looking for in a dating, that people were looking for in a recreational dating relationship. They're looking for a romantic partner. They're looking for some measure of sexual fulfillment. They were looking for companionship of the opposite sex. They, you know, all those things. What's the Bible's, what is God's answer to all of those things? Marriage, right? So, and we don't get to just create new relationship categories. This is, so I'm going to be talking about dating again at 365, and this is going to be one of the big things I talk about there, is dating isn't a relationship status, okay? The relationship statuses in God's economy is single and married. And so dating, recreational dating is just like, hey, let's sort of pretend we're married just kind of for fun, but without any commitment. And it just, you just, God's word has no, God has no category for that. And so people started to realize that. And so now I trust, it's not controversial. It's kind of accepted to say the goal of a dating relationship is to find a marriage partner, is to, it's not just to find a marriage partner, it's to evaluate, is this someone that I could and then should be married to? That's the goal of dating. Now, if you don't agree with that, come find me afterwards and we'll talk about it. But I think it's a, would you guys agree with me that it's a very common idea today? Like, it's not controversial. In fact, most people sort of are like, well, yeah, like that's what you do. That's what dating is for, okay? Here's the breakdown though. Here's the breakdown, is that we say that, but when we actually go to date, we seem to forget all about that. Okay, so it's like you go to get go to apply for a job at the town of Nipawin, like doing like groundskeeping, grass trimming and stuff in the summer. Like, okay, we're gonna do a week with you just to test out your skills in the area first. And you go, okay, and then you show up to work the first day of this week long thing, and they put you down in front of a computer and have you like design invitations for the boss's retirement party for a week, and you're like, I don't totally see how this lines up with the job. That's what so many Christian young people do with dating. They say it's about marriage, but what they do in dating has almost nothing to do with what you actually would be doing if you were trying to actually evaluate whether or not you want to get married to this person. So that's what I'm talking about here tonight, is four big implications. What dating should look like or not look like if it actually is about trying to evaluate whether or not you should be married to this person. Number one, dating should not be about feelings, because marriage isn't about feelings. Okay, that's the first point. Dating should not be about feelings. So, of all the couples you know who have dated, how many of them started dating because they liked each other? Okay, don't just answer that question in your head. What I'm trying to say here, so remember I said that we're going to say some things that are going to be like challenging to you? This is one of the big ones. Dating someone because you like them doesn't make sense. Because being married isn't about liking someone. Being married is about making a commitment to someone that you're going to be faithful to them regardless of how you feel for the rest of your life. And when you are married to someone, your feelings fluctuate all over the place. They do not stay in a constant spot of feeling in like with them or in love with them. And in fact, when we were in pre-marriage counseling, our pastor prepared us for the fact that when you are married, you will feel attraction and romantic chemistry with people that you're not married to. And that's normal, and you need to recognize it and shut it down and not feed it. And you need to cultivate the feelings with your spouse. But staying married is not about staying in a spot of romantic feeling with them. Otherwise, why would you have to make a vow? For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness or in health. Whatever happens, I'm going to be faithful to you. It's not about, it's if it was about feelings, you wouldn't have to say those words. And any married couple who's been married for any length of time knows that you can't follow your heart. You have to lead your heart, right? Now, people who don't understand that, they're the people who show up in their pastor's office after 18 months of being married or two years of being married saying, I'm, I think God wants me to marry this other person. God wants me to. Have you ever heard of someone who said thinks God told them to get a divorce? You know, it's kind of like, I'm pretty sure actually you're wrong because it's the Bible. But what's happening there is their heart is feeling the feels with this other person. When their heart felt the feels with this person, well, they got married to them. And now their heart's feeling the feels with this person, and they're following their heart. This idea that I'm confronting your guys is so ingrained in us. Think about the phrase, fell in love and got married. That's just a phrase, right? That's just how it goes. You fall in love, and then you get married. Which I want to tell you is very strange, because the experience of falling in love and the experience of being married are very different from each other. Falling in love is this emotional, romantic whirlwind. And staying married is about long haul being faithful to someone, regardless of how you feel, regardless of whether they have just puked all over the floor because of morning sickness, or they've got your kid's poop smeared all over their sweater, or whatever it is. It's not all poop and puke, but that does factor pretty big at certain times. Okay? Or when they're getting on your nerves and you don't actually like them in that moment, and all that kind of stuff. Staying married is about choosing to show the self-sacrificial love of Jesus regardless of how you feel. So if that's true, then why would we make dating all about feelings, okay? So what I want to suggest to you is that fell in love and get married, like, oh, I fell in love and then I got married. That sentence is like, I had this really great meal at a restaurant, so I bought the place. Okay? Okay. Having a great meal, like you go to a restaurant, you just have this great experience. That's fun. That's great. But don't you think you need a little bit more of that before you say, I'm going to buy this restaurant? Okay? And that's what I'm saying. Now, hear what I'm not saying here. What I'm not saying is that feelings have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with marriage. If you own a restaurant, you want to serve good food. And you probably want, if you own a restaurant, you want to be able to sit down at the table and enjoy a good meal, right? So there is some connection. I'm not saying that feelings are wrong, that that it's bad to have feelings or you shouldn't have feelings, but they're not enough. They're not enough at all. It's like eating a good meal and buying the restaurant. Another thing I've compared it to at times is that feelings are like gravy on your Christmas dinner, okay? So imagine having Christmas dinner. You got traditional Western, you know, you got your stuffing and your turkey and your potatoes. Imagine eating that without gravy, okay? It's going to be a little dry, but it's going to nourish you, okay? Imagine having just a pitcher full of gravy. Here, Christmas dinner, here's yours. You just have this like cup, it's like a smoothie, you know, with like a straw. Okay, right? Now, that's what a feelings-based relationship is like. God designed romantic feelings. They're good, but they're like the gravy on the meat. You need to make sure there's some meat under there. Okay. So, all of us know what it's like, don't we? To like have a crazy crush on someone and then later to have those feelings change. And even to maybe be really kind of repulsed by someone that you had like crazy feelings about. We all know what it's like. That's why following our feelings is so foolish. So why would we make marriage about that? So feelings shouldn't be taking the lead in dating, because that's not what marriage is about. I'm not saying feelings are wrong, but they shouldn't be in the driver's seat. Dating shouldn't be about feelings because marriage isn't. Number two, dating should not be about sex because marriage isn't. So closely connected to this whole feelings thing is the way in which many Christian relationships are driven by sexual tension. Now not everyone, because many Christian couples just do whatever they want to do, and then their relationships are driven by guilt and ungodliness. But many Christian couples know you're not supposed to have sex till we get married. And so they rush through their relationship and arrive at the altar at their wedding day, having been hurried there on a cloud of sexual tension. And then they find that marriage actually isn't all that they thought it was going to be. Okay? So we're going to have a grown-up conversation here tonight, right? When you really like someone and you want to have sex with them and you haven't, Sex feels like the biggest thing in the world. But it's not. It's not. One of the biggest secrets about sex when it comes to a married relationship is that, well, let's just think about the obvious thing. Every couple who's gotten divorced had sex. And they got divorced. What am I saying by that? Like, it's not everything. And in fact, couples can have a sexual relationship and then, like, want to leave the other person. It's not, guys, it's not magic. I know when you're younger, it can feel like I said, the biggest thing in the world, like it's this magic thing. It's not. People who have sex have bad days. Okay? Married couples find, so like I said again, this is going to be a grown-up conversation. Most married couples have to be deliberate about making sure that they actually maintain their physical relationship, or else the busyness of life just pushes it out to the margins and they don't have time for it. And you might think, that's crazy. When I'm married, we're going to be intimate every single night. No, you won't. You won't. You just won't. You'll have to actually plan for it. And there's going to be times where it's actually really hard to do that. Here's another fact. Most married couples find that it takes them years to get good at sex and actually enjoy it. And you might think that's crazy. No, one study said it's about 20 years before real satisfaction kicks in. It's not like the movies. Nothing is ever like the movies, okay? So pro tip. Nothing's ever like the movies. But on movies, and this is one of the reasons why, you should not watch sex on movies, okay? Nothing critical was shown, it's poison for your brain. And one of the reasons is, movies, you'll see these two strangers stumble into bed together and have this amazing explosive time. That's not reality at all, at all. Just like in a movie, a guy picks up a sword and then goes out against the bad guys and kills 20 guys and comes out unscathed, right? Which is not real life at all. Like, just, okay? And so here's what I'm saying. In a good, healthy marriage relationship where you have trust, where you have communication, where you have respect, where you have time spent together, where you've got the full enchilada, you know what I mean by that phrase? Like, you got all the stuff there. Sex has a good, wonderful, important part of that relationship. Again, maybe a little bit like gravy on food. But if that's all you have, it's not enough. It's not enough. And if you go through a dating relationship fueled and propelled by sexual tension, you know, going as far as you can physically without breaking some silly made-up rule that your youth pastor gave you, and you get to your wedding day just in this rush to just try and get alone together, you may find yourself extremely disappointed. And guys, this is not hypothetical. There are faces in my mind, and I have couples I know where this has been their story, because now they actually have to live with this person. And they just rushed through their dating relationship just so they could have sex. And now they actually have to live with this person. And they don't actually know this person. Because all they did was make out and watch Netflix together. And now they actually have to figure out who this person is. And they're sad. And they've just made a promise for the rest of their life. I'm not making this up. This is the real experience of people. People that I know. Maybe people that you know, not that I'm saying it's the same thing, but they're the same people, but this is common, and it's sad. So this is a big encouragement. Now, we're going to get to kind of where we're going with this. Spend your energies when you're dating on actually getting to know someone as a person. And this is one of the big reasons to draw the line on sexual intimacy in dating where it belongs, okay? Until you're married, you're not married, okay? So young guys, you're all young, but guys who are here, sorry, I'm just going to stop that. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it. Okay, so guys, can you point to me to a verse in the Bible that tells you how far you're allowed to go physically with a woman before you're married to her? A verse in the Bible. Is there a verse?
2 Timothy, treat all sisters with all purity.
Yeah, 1 Timothy 5:2. That's it. Okay, so you got it right there. Timothy's being given instructions on how to treat people in the church. Timothy is told to treat younger women as sisters in all purity. And until she's your wife, she's your sister. Okay, so she's a sister in Christ until she's not, when she's your wife. Now, we want to balance this with the whole biblical pattern, and we see in the Song of Solomon that in looking forward to being sexually intimate with someone, that you have a reasonable hope to actually do that is good. But you got to watch that. That's why the Song of Solomon, right? Awaken love until it's so desired. So there's this like, hold your jets. But yet there's also this sense that, yeah, like to look forward to it is one thing. Now that's different than lust and fantasy, and we're not going to break all that down now. But physically, what's appropriate before marriage is what's appropriate for a family member. Okay, so you just got to know that. Another really key text, we're going to talk about this more. I'm trying not to overlap with the 365 talks. I know some of you might be there. 1 Corinthians 6:18. It does not say avoid sexual immorality. It says what? Right? So if there's a bear here that wants to eat me and I'm just like standing here, I'm avoiding it, but it's probably going to eat me. So if I want to not be eaten by the bear, I need to actively run away from it faster than I'm currently doing right now, right? And so that's okay. So this bear is sexual immorality. Many couples, okay, so I remember when we were dating, a guy was like, you know, Chris, me and my girlfriend, we did well for like the first 6 months, and then we got into some really stuff we shouldn't have. So like, okay, so let me give you a tip, Chris. So like, when you're like watching a movie late at night in her parents' basement, like make sure you sit under separate blankets, okay? And I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm not sure if I said that, but I was thinking it, okay? I said, Amy and I will never be watching a movie late at night in her parents' basement, because that's not fleeing sexual immorality. That's like running towards the bear and saying, hey, buddy, come here, you know? So separate blankets, that's like saying, well, there was like 6 inches between me and the bear. I don't know why he bit me, okay? So you need to flee, actively putting increasing distance between yourself and the opportunity to sin sexually. That's what the Bible commands you to do. So here's the thing. Now I'm getting into my other 365 talk stuff, but okay, being alone in her parents' basement at night watching a movie is already sinning, because the command is not to avoid sexual immorality. The command is to flee. So if you're not fleeing, you're already in disobedience to God. And then is there any surprise that you blow it and you're like, I don't know, it just happened. Well, no, it didn't just happen. You weren't fleeing, okay? And what I'm trying to help you understand here tonight is this isn't just about checking some box and just being like, okay, I made it to my wedding day without, you know, committing this or this act. No, it's actually so important that you don't build a dating relationship on sexual tension, so that you actually get to know this person, so that you actually can have a real happy married relationship where sex is a wonderful bit in there, but it's not everything, and you actually enjoy being with this person, because you actually got to know them. It's really important, okay? Number three, I do guarantee you guys we're getting to some lighter, happier stuff here at the end and some practical stuff. But number three, dating should have no tolerance for pornography. Many young people are willing to tolerate a boyfriend or a girlfriend who comes to them every week and says, oops, I looked at porn again. Oh, that's okay. Oops, I looked at porn again. Oh, that's okay. Oops, I looked at porn again. Oh, that's okay. Because they think, strangely, that when they get married, that problem's going to go away. Is anyone familiar statistically what happens with an unchecked porn problem when you get married? What happens?
It seeps into the relationship.
It gets worse. I'm talking specifically about the porn thing. It gets worse. It happens with increased frequency, not less. And I could talk about all the reasons for that, and there's some reasons for that that are actually really helpful. That's at least the statistic with men from a few years ago. And then the more in marriage, and I know porn is a problem for both men and women, but being a man, that's mostly what I'll speak to. The more that a guy in marriage uses porn, the more his wife withdraws from him, and it just makes the cycle worse and worse and worse. Now, here's part of why it's so different in marriage. And so let me speak to you ladies here. Ladies, you have no idea how painful it is to offer yourself to a man completely, and I'm talking sexually, to be completely vulnerable with him, to offer yourself to him completely, and then to have him turn around and seek satisfaction in images on a screen. You have no idea how painful that is. It is one of the most painful experiences that a woman can have. And so that's why when you're dating, you might be tempted to just think, oh, okay, I'll just keep saying it's no big deal, it's no big deal, and it'll go away when we get married. It won't. And the pain that is waiting for you, if you don't heed this warning, is so much greater than you can know at this point. Someone needs to have kicked porn to the curb before they get married. Now, what does that look like to kick porn to the curb? I can't give you a magic number, like it has to be this many days or this many weeks. But here's just a rule of thumb. If every time you go home from Bible school, you look at porn, you haven't kicked porn to the curb. Okay. So I know in this environment where you've got, you know, people helpfully helping you all the time, this is a great environment to make some big strides. But if every time you go home out of this environment, you're back at it, then you haven't beat it yet. And what makes you think it's going to be any different when you get married? It's going to be quite probably even worse. And so you need to be free from the control of porn in the real world. And ladies, just as a man, let me say it to you. You need to make sure of this before you trust a guy with your body, with your heart, with your future. You need to be able to trust him. Don't think that you're the one exception to the case and that you'll fix it. It doesn't work that way. So dating can't have a tolerance for an ongoing problem with porn because marriage will be wrecked by it. Number four, I realize here I am kind of giving the guys a hard time tonight, but hey, I enjoy that and you guys can benefit from it. Number four, dating is a key place for men to lead because marriage is. Okay, so far I've said like three things marriage isn't. Marriage isn't about feelings, marriage isn't about sex, and marriage will be destroyed by porn, so those things can't be part of a dating relationship. Now I'm talking about something that is. Marriage is a key place for men to lead because dating is a key place for men to lead because marriage is a key place for men to lead. So I hope by now you know God's design and intention for the roles of men and women in marriage. And the more that I'm married and the more that I counsel other people in marriage, I realize just how practical these rules are. Wives, submit to your husbands in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Like, this is God's design, and you can try and figure out your own design, and good luck with that, okay? But God's design is beautiful. And ladies, we all know that deep down in your heart of hearts, if you're going to get married, you want a man who will lead you with safe hands and who you can gladly submit to, with whom you will be safe. That's what you want, right? So there's that, like, submission and all of that gets down to the heart of who we are. So there's that story, some of you will have heard this, about how submission is not about whether you're good at something or not. So the story is, you know, a guy and a girl are dating and they're out walking and a guy comes out and is like, hey, give me your wallets and yeah, give me the girl. And the girl's a black belt in karate and the guy doesn't know what to do with his hands. But the guy steps in front of the girl and says, no, over my dead body. Okay, so then the robber knocks the guy down, and then the girl uses her black belt skills and takes the robber out, right? So you've probably heard that story. And when you hear that story, all the girls in your hearts, you go, ah. Oh. Because like the thought of a guy who is like hopeless and clumsy and knows that you're way better, that he would still like stand in front of you and say, you touch her over my dead body. That like does something to a girl's heart. And guys, that should do something to your heart. You'd be like, yeah, I'd be the guy to get taken. I'll get taken out by the robber. You know, like you break my nose, man. Like, you know, like we know these are fitting. This is how God made us. This is a part of our souls. It's what we want. So why is it that when so many Christian couples start dating, they forget all about it entirely? And here's what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the fact that many young women are so desperate for a guy that they will wear the pants in the dating relationship. They will flirt and they will initiate and they will lead and they will make themselves as available as possible and they'll make best friends with his mom and they'll make themselves as easy of a catch as possible to make it basically impossible for him to not date them. And sadly, some guys really like it. They like the fact that the woman's doing all, taking all of the risks, taking all of the initiative, taking all of the lead, because it's safe and it's comfortable and they just kind of coast along. And then you get married and ladies, you expect him to lead you, when you've just done all of the leading up until that point. Do you see kind of how this doesn't really make sense? Okay, so pro tip. This is not a magic ring, okay? This is my wedding ring. It's not magic. When you put this is really what I've been saying all along. When you put this ring on, when you get married, nothing magical happens. Who you are before marriage is largely who you will be after marriage. Now, you will change and grow. But if a guy has never had to lead before he gets married, what makes you think he's suddenly going to step up afterwards? Like, it just, there's no magical properties here. Although, as I joke, sometimes it does make people disappear for a while when they put it on. There, I'm just talking about the fact that, that might sound like a dirty joke. It's not. I'm just talking about the fact that when many couples get married for the first few months, they don't talk to their friends, and I don't think that's always a really good thing. But anyways, I can think of many women I know who are in frustrating marriages with men who won't lead them, and they're desperate to be led, and he won't lead them. And it's their fault, because they did all the leading when they were dating and never gave him a chance to lead, and actually he doesn't, and they just kind of let it happen. Now, we need to be careful here. The Bible does not say, girlfriends, submit to your boyfriends. So there is a way that a relationship works in marriage that it should not necessarily, like, you don't have to submit to your boyfriend the way that a wife submits to her husband. Nevertheless, you need to be able to tell, ladies, that a guy, and guys, I hope you're here, I'm talking to you too here, a guy needs to be able to lead. He needs to have a pattern of taking the initiative. And that starts way back at the beginning. So I brought some books here tonight. It's interesting, we read books about everything else except for, like, one of the most important decisions we make in our life. So I have some books from our church library about dating. This one's a great book called Doing Things Right in Matters of the Heart by John Ensor. Anyone here ever read it or heard of it? It's a few years old. Excellent book. Anyways, he on page 91, he says, I was speaking with a small circle of college students, Christian brothers in their mid-20s mostly. One of them expressed the problem squarely. I don't like to ask, and here he's talking about, like, asking a girl out. I don't like to ask until I see all the right signals that she is going to say yes. My response? Coward, you are the man. And he goes on to develop the idea that as a man, it is your place to take the burden of risk and responsibility and vulnerability onto your shoulders in the relationship, not hers. So this comes from an article by Brendan Anderson I read years ago. And he talks about intentionality in dating. The intentional man, so until I tell you, I'm quoting from this article. The intentional man repeatedly and constantly goes first and takes on all the risk of rejection. He always lets the girl know where he stands so she feels secure and isn't left guessing. On the other hand, don't weird her out by talking about marriage on the first date. So then he gives a few examples of what an intentional guy versus an unintentional guy looks like. And guys, the point here is that you be the intentional guy, okay? Approaching her initially, intentional. I'd like to take you out on a date. Unintentional. Want to hang out sometime? My roommates are all gone this weekend. Okay. Paying the bill. Intentional. I've got it. Unintentional. Can you cover half the bill? I'm pretty broke right now. He says, my wife believes this communicates you're worth about $20, but not quite $40. Okay. Following up after a date. Intentional guy. Following up after a date. I had a great time tonight and would definitely want to do this again. I'll give you a call net this week. Okay. Unintentional. I'll call you sometime. Okay. Things are going well in the relationship. Intentional guy. I think you are a godly, beautiful woman and I have a great time with you. I would like to pursue a relationship with you. Unintentional guy. "So, what do you think about us?" Right? So see what happened there? Is he makes her do the definition and take the risk and vulnerability, okay? Or, "I'm not sure where I stand. What about you?" Okay. Things look like they could go well for a long time. Intentional guy. "I don't date for the sake of dating, and marriage is a long ways away," or you could say it might be a long ways away, "but I couldn't be happier with how things are going. I think you're amazing." Unintentional. "Things are going okay, I guess. We'll see." Recognizing the end of a relationship, which, by the way, is not a failure. If a dating relationship is designed to evaluate whether or not you can get married, if the answer is no and you break it off, then you've successfully answered the question, right? Dating's not about just finding a spouse. It's about answering the question, okay? So recognizing the end of a relationship, intentional. "I am sorry, I don't see this progressing past friendship." Unintentional guy. Time passing, cold shoulder, you stop calling. See, he doesn't say anything, right? No, still quoting here. "Ultimately, the unintentional guy's responses are selfish because they put his interests before the woman's, and they're moreover cowardly because he avoids addressing where the relationship is, leaving the woman marooned in relationship limbo. The man in the relationship should always have an answer for three questions. What is this relationship? What are your intentions? How are you demonstrating those intentions right now?" Guys, if you're dating, you must always have an answer for those three questions. The big idea is this, men. Don't keep her guessing. Let her know exactly where you are at all of the time. It is a risk, of course, but better on you than her. Own it. Okay. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Not kind of. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about dating is a key place for men to show initiative. Now, ladies, if you're dating a guy and he's not doing any of that, what makes you think he's magically going to learn how just because he's got a ring on his finger? And actually, he kind of might be worse because he doesn't feel like he needs to impress you anymore because I've got the girls, I can do whatever I want now, okay? Which is sadly common. Now, ladies, I want to say a word to you here. At times, it is possible to have your expectations be too high. It is possible. If you're comparing the guy that you're dating or interested in to the godly men in your church who are 45 and 50, okay? You can't expect him to be at that level of godliness and maturity, but he'd better be pointed in that direction and be showing a growth pattern in that direction, okay? You need to be able to see a trajectory, and the idea is you look for a great chunk of marble from which the statue can get carved over time. But if instead you've got a guy who's not that great chunk of marble, that statue is just not going to magically spring to life here. However, that being said, most of the time, what I see these days with most young ladies is not having expectations that are too high. It's expectations that are way too low. And the first guy with the pulse to show them interest, they go for it, and if there's no guys with pulses around who show them interest, then they go to find some new environment where there are guys with pulses, and they get married to the first guy with the pulse, and then many of them end up very sad, and they're that way for the rest of their life. And so look for a guy who's going to lead you. Now, we're going to talk about some practical advice here. And just so if all of this is true, what should dating actually then look like? Okay, so if it's not about feelings, if it's not about sex, if it shouldn't have tolerance for porn, if it is an environment for men to lead and take the initiative, so what are some practical things actually with how dating actually looks? And just so you know, there's so much I'm not saying tonight. Like when we would do that multi-week series, we would talk about a biblical theology of singleness and a biblical theology of marriage and how that all fits in and how you shouldn't just be desperate to just get married at whatever cost because that's not biblical and all of that. But tonight we're just talking about dating. What's some practical advice about dating itself if all of these things are true? So we're going to take, I got started a little late, so maybe like 10 minutes on this stuff. Here's the big idea. dating is not a real, like, well, so tell me this, okay? Some of you who know English and parts of speech and all of that, what kind of word is dating? What part of speech is that? It is a verb. Dating is a verb. It is not a relationship status. Okay, so many people think dating is a relationship status. Oh, we're dating now, which means we've shifted into this new relationship status, which means that we're allowed to make out, okay? And what I'm saying to you is that dating is actually a verb where you are going on dates together, getting to know each other in order to answer the question, should we keep doing this? And we're exploring whether this is something that's going to lead to marriage. So men, a lot of this is going to be on you. But ladies, he's going to need your help, and you have a big part in this as well. Here's some practical advice, okay? Number one, when you're dating, you need to set expectations and talk about them. So one of the things, I remember when Amy and I started dating, and then like that next Sunday, it was like we were going out for lunch, and it was like, oh, you're going out for like, just because you're going out for lunch does now, and we're dating, does that mean I'm going out with you? Or like, I'm just going to go have lunch with my parents, and so do you have to come because we're dating? Like, you know what I'm talking about? It's just like, what do we do now? You got to sit down and actually talk about those expectations. You need to clarify, like, for example, how much time is appropriate to spend together when we're dating? How many times a week or a month are we going to connect? What kinds of things are we going to do? Like, you need to actually talk that stuff through, because probably the two of you have very different ideas in your head, and you need to clarify those expectations and re-clarify them when you need to. Number two, spend time with other people. I joked about married couples disappearing, but often, sadly, that happens well before marriage. People start dating and then just poof, where'd they go? Because they're always just off by themselves. Marriage isn't about being, so this actually could have been one of the prior points, okay? Maybe I should have put this in one of the things we talked about. Marriage isn't about being in isolation. Marriage is about living together as you're with other people in relationships all the time. And so spending time with other people when you're dating is so important. People who can watch you, who can give you feedback on your relationship, on whether it's healthy or not. Spend time with people who aren't desperate to just see you together. Like, some of you who have dated or are dating, you know, like, there's those people, you know, if you're like, oh, that's so awesome that you're dating them, and they just so want you to be together, and they'll just tell you whatever you want to hear. You spend time with people who, like, don't care if you break up, so they can actually give you, like, honest feedback about whether this relationship is heading in a healthy direction or not. Subsequent to that, spend time when you're dating with other married couples. This is so important. Ask them about the lessons that they learned when they were dating. Ask them about the lessons they've learned since being married. And sometimes you might just be playing a board game with them, but build relationships with married couples. That is, guys, so important. To build a team of mentors around you who can help you. Dating is making the most significant decision of your life, who you're going to marry. Why would you not want to involve a team of wise people? I remember a guy that I was mentoring in Regina was dating his girlfriend, and they so deliberately, they built a team of four or five key couples that at least once every month or two, they would spend time with them and allowing these couples to get to know them. And it still just, it almost makes me tear up because it was such a beautiful thing. The week before he proposed, every night that week, he called up the man in each of these couples and said, I want to ask her to marry me. What do you think? And he wanted the blessing of each of those guys. And that's just so good. And if those people had said, no, man, he would have listened. Because he didn't think, well, I know better because I trust my heart because I watch Disney movies, you know? So, guys, that's what you want. Here's a really powerful lesson. I remember reading once about a guy who did search and rescue in the woods in Nova Scotia, which is the lost capital of Canada. The woods are so tangled and snarly, people get lost there all the time. This guy, who is an outdoor expert woodsman, will not go into the woods without two compasses. Why two compasses? Anyone know why? Any other answers?
Make sure they're not accurate.
Any other answers? Okay, you want to know the real reason? Is because we humans have an impulse that if we think we know something and something tells us we're wrong, we're going to go with our gut. So if you're lost in the woods and you think the way back is that way and the compass tells you it's this way, even the most expert woodsman is going to be inclined to think, oh, there's something wrong with my compass, and go with his heart. So he brings two compasses. So if both of the compasses point there, then he can say, nothing wrong with my compass, I must be wrong. And he follows the compasses. That is such a powerful picture for why we need people around us who can shoot straight with us. So I'm saying, no, I know. No, you don't. You need other people to help you, okay? So spend time when you're dating with other people. Build a team of mentors. Find ways to serve together, okay? Marriage is not just about watching Netflix together all the time. So you want to marry someone who you can serve with, who you know that they can serve. Why do you think they're going to serve you if you've never seen them serve anybody else? Think about it. So serve together. Find ways to work together. Find ways to have conversations about difficult topics. Find ways to have fun together, which is also important. So see, marriage involves all of those things, and you want to find out, can I do these things with this person? Can we do them together? And so I remember I was doing some mentoring with a couple, and all they did was have these intense conversations together. And I was like, guys, like, go for a walk, like play a game, like do something that you enjoy, play Frisbee, whatever, because that's, you need to be able to know that you actually enjoy this person, not just that you agree about all the big topics. Although agreeing about all the big topics is important too. You want to talk about things like schooling of your kids and career, and you want to make sure your life trajectories are going to line up. Read a book together. Okay, talk about books. This book here, The Sacred Search by Gary Thomas. Have any of you ever read this book or seen this book? Okay, The Sacred Search. This is an excellent book for dating couples to read together. And it's got a series of questions and conversations. It talks about meeting with another couple to talk about some of these things. This is such a great thing. Why would you not spend the time doing something like this when you're making one of the most important decisions of your life, okay? This can be a great thing to do. And one of the things is just as you're dating, to actually sit down and brainstorm the types of things that you want to do together on your dates. Like, okay, we want to get to know each other. What does that actually look like? Let's go to Tim Hortons and we'll sit down, we'll have a notebook and we'll each share ideas and we'll make an intentional, deliberate list of the kinds of things we're going to do together. And some of you might be rolling your eyes and thinking, oh, that sounds like so much work. Like, can it just happen? Like, a good relationship, it just happens, okay? That's Disney princess thinking, okay? The only thing in life that ever just happens is things falling apart. Okay, think about it. Like, when you leave something just to happen, it falls apart. You want your car to keep running? You got to keep working, putting gas in it. Change the oil. Some of you might not even know that that's a thing. You have to... Right? Am I right? So... You have to be deliberate. A relationship is the same thing. And why would you think that the most important decision in your life, who you're going to marry, if you're going to get married, because not everyone will, and we're not talking about singleness tonight, but why do you think the most important decision in your life you can just let happen and just kind of coast and do whatever you feel like? It just doesn't make sense. So being deliberate. Now, I'm going to end here with a piece of practical advice that ties all of this together. I think one of the most important things that a dating couple can do as they evaluate each other, as they evaluate whether or not being married is something that is good or not, is to get involved in a local church together. And some of you think, of course you'd say that, pastor. Okay. Now, I believe it's true. And I've said this before I was a pastor. No, maybe that's not true. But anyways, I really believe this is true. I really, really, really believe this is true. Because serving other people in a local church is where all this stuff you can rise to the surface and see. Right? Because serving a local church is where you can see, is someone going to be like, oh no, I don't do that ministry. It's not my spiritual gift to do that. So I'm not going to do that. Well, what? And like, you want someone who knows that they can serve even when it doesn't feel like it's their spiritual gift, because you're going to need it, you know, like when you've just like barfed all over the floor and they need to clean it up. I don't know anyone whose spiritual gift is cleaning up barf, but you want to be, I mean, if someone here has that, like, I've got work for you, but you want someone in marriage who has the ability and the heart to serve even when they don't feel like it, to stay faithful even when they don't feel like it. You want a great place to see that? How do they relate to that smelly senior citizen in your church that no one wants to sit beside? How do they relate to those cranky kids in the nursery that no one wants to spend time with? How they do that kind of stuff is how you actually see their character and how they're going to do with for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, for better, for worse, till death do us part. It's where you see, serving other people selflessly. It's where you can see them submitting to authority, okay? So guys, when you are, and I want to talk for a second here about authority. There are two big problems in the church today when it comes to authority. One is spiritual abuse, and the other is people who think that any little bit of authority is spiritual abuse. Both of those are major problems. Okay, so I'm talking here about abusive leaders, and I'm talking here about rebellious people who don't submit to anybody and think that any bit of leadership is spiritual abuse. Both of those are major problems. So I just want to get that out of the way. As I talk about submitting to authority here, I'm not talking about ungodly dictatorial authority, but if someone thinks all authority is ungodly and dictatorial, that's a big warning sign. Okay, big warning sign. When you get married, you submit yourself to a covenant. You say, I will be faithful to you no matter what until one of us dies. You submit your feelings, you submit your future, you submit yourself to a covenant. Where else do we do that kind of thing? In our local church, particularly with the covenant of membership, where we submit ourselves to a group of people and say, I'm going to love you and I'm going to be faithful to you and I'm not just going to bounce around from one church to the next. Brad, did they know about Tuesday, that I'm coming to speak about the church on Tuesday? So these two talks actually just segue just perfectly. I didn't plan that. But if someone can never submit to anybody else, if they're always just rebellious and independent and they know everything themselves, are they going to be able to submit to the marriage covenant? Are they going to submit to the leaders in their church when the leaders in their church say, don't you dare walk out the door on that person? No, you're not going to divorce them for that hot thing down the road. You are going to stay faithful because that's what you promised to do. You want to marry someone who can stick to that. And how are you going to find that out now? Well, by seeing how are they with their church today. And it could be other leaders and other involvements, but the church is so key. Here's just a final big one, again, for you ladies, okay? Here's what the Bible says. Husbands, so follow this with me. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. So Jesus loves the church, and husbands are to learn from that and are to love their wives. So what's one of the ways that you can tell if a guy's going to do that? Whether or not he, like Jesus, loves what? The church. So if he doesn't love the church, then he's not like Jesus, because Jesus loves the church. And so if a guy doesn't love the church, what makes you think he's going to love you like Jesus loves the church? See what I'm saying? It just doesn't make sense. So this is where I think church involvement is one of the biggest ways to see someone else's character and actually do stuff together. So when Amy and I were dating, once a week, we went to a senior's home and served a bunch of people that neither of us particularly liked. And it didn't matter whether we liked them or not, because that's what selfless serving is. And we were exhausted when we were done, and we would go back to her parents' place because we didn't spend time alone behind closed doors together. And we'd go back to her parents' place, or we'd go to Angela's place, and we wanted to see Angela too. But we weren't going to be alone together. But that we learned both there that some really important things about each other. So, guys, there's so much more to say. This is just a start, but hopefully there's been some things here that have been helpful for you. If you want to come look, I've got these are four books that are just, these are really helpful for digging more into this. Each of them offers a good angle. I'm going to be hanging around here for a few minutes. If you want to come ask me questions or punch me in the face, I'm going to be here. And then of course I think next Wednesday, ladies, I'm gonna hang out with you, and we're gonna just like talk about this, and you can ask me questions or whatever. So please write down your questions or your complaints or whatever. But that's it. Thanks for having me here tonight, guys. This was great.